This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
We'll move next to Nikki Smith from the National Museum of Australia. Nikki's going to be talking about risk management and light levels. Now, Nikki is the Deputy Manager of the Conservation Section at the National Museum. She has a background in chemistry and archaeology and studied conservation at the University of Canberra. Nikki has been very, very involved for the last couple of years in this issue of developing the museum's preventive conservation programs, in particularly the work she's done on lighting guidelines. So, Nikki, welcome to the program.
Well, hello everyone. I spoke here last year on much the same topic, so I'm kind of delighted to follow Rosin's lead and again talk about significance and risk and how we can apply that to lighting guidelines at the National Museum. So firstly, I just want to review or summarise our current lighting guidelines and then give an overview in the year that's been since the last collection symposium. One of the primary purposes of a museum is to exhibit, but most of you will be aware that light fades some colours or materials. The fading is cumulative, irreversible and unavoidable for light-sensitive materials if they are to be exposed to light. We know the amount of fading is dependent on the specific dye and the substrate, the intensity of the light and the length of exposure. So logically, conservators have been recommending display of light-sensitive material at low light levels for reduced periods of time. So our current exhibition lighting guidelines compare an object with a blue wall standard, which are known to fade at set rates. The BW stands for the blue wall. The blue wall standards range from 1 to 8, with 1 being extremely light-sensitive and 8 being stable. So an example of a 1 would be one or two would be an early photographic processes or a blueprint, whereas an 8 would be most stone or ceramics or glass. The concept is that the more light sensitive the object, the less time it is on display. By limiting the time per decade, the object retains some ability to be displayed, or it has some useful life over at least hundreds of years, possibly even more. For blue wall 2 and 3, we would recommend between 50 and 100 lux and at 2 years per decade, or 20% of the time. This means that it would have 4 changeovers per exhibition, and that we take here as a life of exhibition to be about 10 years. Some examples here would be a naturally dyed Maningrida basket, or some low-quality acrylic paintings. For blue wool 3 and 4, we would recommend between 50 and 150 lux for 50% of its exposure time, so that means 5 years per decade. Some examples here would be coloured feathers, many textiles and many paper objects. Above blue wool 4, the rates of fading at most controlled light levels, such as in museums where the UV is filtered out, would be negligible, so we would recommend that they can stay on display for the life of the exhibition. So there's 2 things to note with these current lighting guidelines. Now, if any of you remember last year's talk when I was talking about evolution of lighting guidelines, previous lighting guidelines have banded together blue wall 1 to blue wall 4. Now, that makes a huge generalisation, and where it means blue wall 1 objects are overexposed, blue wall 4 objects are underexposed. Now, we can be confident in separating out between the blue wall 1s to the blue wall 4s because we now have a microfade testing machine. And this is what I've referred to down here, the microfading zone. So anything we think is in this range or where we don't know what the materials might be doing, we test with our microfade machine. Secondly, we no longer specify a set light level, such as 50 lux. Now we're trying to work with a range of light levels. And this is... there's a growing consensus in conservation and understanding that, I think it was Marianne this morning referred to it as a pseudoscience, where to actually apply science properly or well, you need to understand some of the principles behind the assumptions. And I think conservation as a whole is beginning to understand that fade rates and lighting are quite complex phenomena, and our models and some of our equipment, such as a lux meter, provide assumptions without being able to provide exact figures or exact levels of fade rate. So we're trying to move to a range of lighting levels that takes into account some of these assumptions and also the fact that we want the object to be viewed. Many people that come into the museum, part of our demographic is over 40. Once you're over 40, your eyesight level starts to, or your eyesight ability starts to diminish. For any object that is detailed or dark or large, you need significantly higher levels of light to be able to see it well. So one of the things that conservation is coming to terms with is there is risk in putting objects on display. There is inherent damage going to occur. We do want the public to be able to see objects when they are on display. Oh, this is our microfade tester that I was referring to. It's a machine. There's only about 8 in the world. It's a prototype that was developed in North America a few years ago. It has a laser that produces a high amount of light on a very minute pinpoint, and we can compare the colour change on the object and compare it against the blue wall standards. So in approximately a 20-minute run, we can compare to hundreds of years of light exposure. So here, Bruce, who's done most of the work for us at the museum, Bruce and I are looking at Azaria Chamberlain's dress and booties. And you can see in the graph, so it's a bit hard to see from here, blue wall 1, fade rate is this one up here, blue wall 2, fade rate, blue wall 3, and blue wall 4 along the bottom. You can see the little dotted line is Azaria's booties, are the dotted line along here. And you can see the dress is down here below blue wall 4, so we would consider that quite stable. So what effect has the microfading machine had on our changeover rate here at the museum? So this is a graph of about 200 objects that have been tested over the last 18 months. The benefit of this machine is that it removes the guesswork about where to place an object in the blue wall range. Now, in the past, conservators, being conservative, have tended to be overly cautious, and we have thought, oh, you know, it's a textile, maybe it's going to fade, we better stick it in the, 2 years per 10 changeover. Well, now we can actually test our objects that we're concerned about and say, well, actually, no, it's a modern synthetic dye, actually it's quite stable, we can leave it on for 10 years. So this graph is a bit of data that we've collected over the last few years. So you can actually see almost 40% of the objects we've tested, the display period has stayed the same. So we've kind of, our estimation has been relatively justifiable. 6% of the objects have actually, the time on display has decreased, or the number of changeovers has actually increased. Now that's actually heartening for conservators, because our justification then is we're actually providing better protection for the collection as it goes on display. Here you can see 66% of the collection has actually increased in display period. Now that's fantastic as well. It means objects that would, for example, this 15% here, an object that previously might have been in the 2 year per 10 regime has actually been moved up to it can stay on display for 10 years or the life of exhibition. That effectively means those objects that would have had four changeovers now don't need any changeovers, which is a huge, a huge burden or release of burden from staff workloads. Now, Eric did a rough... I don't know if I should say this. Eric did a rough calculation with a previous chief financial officer, and they came up with a figure of about $1,000 per changeover. Some of you will know some changeovers will be much easier and cheaper to deliver than that, and some objects will be much more expensive to change over than that. But it's, you know, it kind of is a rough guide to where we think a changeover might cost. So having said that, there's two drivers for most of this work. I know there's some assistant directors and acting directors in the audience. So the first priority is to save money. But it's hard to convince conservators just about saving money. What we actually want to do is provide better care for the collection. So by applying risk management principles to collection management, that's our aim. We want to put lighting in context with other risks that the collection faces. We have to identify that all objects are not equal. I think Eric talked this morning about history of conservation, and I think some of us had the concept when we first studied that all objects were to be treated equal. But in reality, I think times have changed, and we're moving towards a risk-based management model where all objects are not equal. We need to be treating them differently, and we need to be assessing each object for the risks that it faces. So our aim is to add another layer of risk management to our lighting guidelines. Okay, the aim is to take our lighting guidelines, our current lighting guidelines, based on fade rates, and incorporate an estimation of use. Most museums have less than 1% of their collection on display. A small number of objects are used frequently, a moderate number of objects go on display infrequently, and a large number of objects never go on display. We want to include the common sense idea that if an object is not going to be on display very often, it can move up one category in the display lighting guidelines. Those objects that we know or suspect are high use or highly significant, we would leave at exactly the same levels of exposure and light levels as previously. But those objects that we consider average use, we consider other risks would take precedence, we want to move them up one step in the lighting guidelines. So this one is the same as here, more or less. This one's the same as here. So we'll just step them up one category. And we've started to use the word high use instead of high use is synonymous with significance. Significance does not always equate with high use, but it's often a driver for high use. The category of average use or significance includes other major risks. The common example for an object's conservator is a bark painting or a pukamani pole, where handling or changes in fluctuating humidity can cause paint loss, and that's potentially far more significant than a bit of light exposure where red ochres, clay and charcoal are extremely light stable. So here a conservator could be assessing the situation, saying, well, you know, light damage to a bark painting is minimal, but handling, transport, vibration, interventive conservation treatment can have a huge impact on the object. Therefore, we'd actually be recommending it stay on display rather than changing it over. A similar one is Farlap's heart. Dare I mention it? Similarly, the risks to Farlap's heart are in vibration, transport, handling. They're not in light exposure. The significance of Farlap's heart is its size, its physical dimensions. Anything that would impact on the physical dimensions would alter its significance. The fact that it might change slightly from its brownish kind of fixed hue, we may or may not consider that of primary significance. Here I've just put up a slide of a couple of examples where we think things might be high use or moderate or average use. Azaria Chamberlain's dress and booties, I've been at the museum 10 years now, and this object is always on demand, either on display here or online. So this object would be in the high use category. Now, the yellow plastic overpants below, although it's earmarked for display in our new landmarks gallery, and you can argue that the Snowy Mountains hydro scheme is a very important topic, and that topic may always be on display at the National Museum or be covered in some form at the National Museum, that particular object may or may not go on display again. So at this stage, there's no history of it being on display in the past. At this stage, it would be sitting in the average use category. So to have exhibition lighting guidelines incorporating use rates or significance involves dialogue and discussion between curators and conservators. And I guess this is just building on what Rosalind was saying. It's about dialogue, it's about discussion, it's about reaching consensus and assessments of significance are not new for curators, but we need to build into conservation the idea of significance and risk-based assessments. All objects that come into the National Historic Collection do undergo an assessment of significance. So in our discussions to refine our lighting guidelines, we want to be discussing questions like, is colour of primary significance? Is the object in pristine condition? Will it be frequently requested for display? And again, the aim here is not to be dogmatic or create concern about allocating where an object is either high or moderate use or significance. If there's any feeling of discomfort or uncertainty, we can consider the object high use and we can test it with our microfade machine. This will have a slight cost to the museum, but it's better. What we actually want to move to is that we have lighting guidelines that are flexible, but that also that people, that staff here embrace, and that there's some reassurance that we're providing the most appropriate protection to our collection within a risk management framework. So, implementation. Where are we up to? So over the last year, we have had strong support from our curatorial staff about introducing significance into our lighting guidelines. We're at the stage now where we're trying to work through how, in reality, how feasible is it for a curator to allocate a level of significance or use every single time an object is selected for display. This will not be quick, considering the object list for landmarks alone is around 1,300 objects. Conservators then need to be involved with the discussion and assess how the risk of lighting relates to other risks associated with the object. But reassessing significance or use each time an object is selected for display allows for significance and use to change over time, which I'm sure you're aware is highly possible. We will also need to modify our collection database to incorporate and track the decisions made around each object. However, the benefit is obvious to this work. There's a small amount of effort required at the beginning, but the payoff to the museum as a whole is quite considerable. Not only does it save us money, but it allows us to prioritise our workloads under a more systematic risk management framework. So now I've just done a bit of an estimation about number of changeovers for a lifetime of a gallery, which I've taken as about 10 years. And I've assumed about 100 objects in the gallery. Some of you will know GFA is sitting around 1,000. Landmarks is current gallery being developed is more than 1,000 objects, and our Australian Journeys gallery is a bit less than 1,000 objects. So these figures are not to be taken as representative of a gallery. They're just to give you an idea of how changeovers might change if we applied a significance or use rate lighting guidelines. So here we've got our blue wool equivalent. We've got the number of objects that we're guesstimating might be in each blue wool equivalent. We've estimated 5% are in the extremely fugitive light-sensitive area. Now, this is a bit of an overestimation, but it allows for some loans that, you know, in the past we've had loans that we've had to change over every 3 months. We've guesstimated 35% sitting in the 2 to 3 blue wool range, 30% in the 3 to 4 range, and 30% in the lifetime of an exhibition. Time on display in years would be less than 2 years, 2 years, 5 years, and 10 years. So this means the number of objects that would actually be sitting in that blue wool category would be 50, 350, 300, 300. Now, this, the number of changeovers per object would be more than 4, 4, 1, and 0. So the total number of changeovers end up with about 1,900 for that gallery over a 10-year period. Now, that's with our current lighting guidelines, using the microfade machine to make the best estimate of light sensitivity. Now, if we apply our use-based or significance-based guidelines, again, I've just plucked a figure out of the air, 10% are high use. You can see exactly the same. We've got our blue wall equivalent. We've got our percent of objects per blue wall category, time on display, number of objects. And here, then we start to split. So because these are so, blue wall 1 to 2 are so light sensitive, we haven't recommended leaving any of them on display. We've maintained the status quo. All would come off display. We would recommend coming off display at the less than 2-year period. We're assuming 10% of our blue wall 2 to 3s are high significance, and the remainder are average, and so it goes on. Again, we apply the number of changeovers per object. The total number of changeovers comes down to about 685 compared to 1,900 previously. Now, that's with a 10% high use rate. If you want to be more conservative and say a 20%, you consider 20% of your objects in the gallery are high use, your changeovers are still going to be reduced by at least half. So, hopefully by this time next year, I don't know if Guy will let me come back collection symposium next year. Hopefully next year I'll be up here saying, yes, we have implemented risk-based exhibition lighting guidelines. Yes, our changeover program has decreased. Yes, we are still adequately protecting our most light-sensitive material. And yes, we are prioritising our resources, where is the most benefit to the collection. And I'd just like to acknowledge some of the objects we've tested. Bruce Ford, for all his work on the light fading conservation section and the curatorial section that have been involved with these discussions. Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.